Today we're going to talk about the duck. The duck is a correctional officer or staff officer who the inmates have decided are easily manipulated and can get things out of them. There is a section in every prison correctional officer training program about the duck. The thing, of course, is that inmates are very aware of the duck as well and use it extremely efficiently. So you have to be quite aware that the duck is coming for you. So you have to know it, understand it, and be constantly aware that it's happening. So here is the story that every correctional officer, probably even every convict, has heard. So it starts out with cracking the shell takes time and effort. You have to go about developing a duck in the manner that creates very little suspicion. A man would be a fool to just walk up to a joint cop and ask him to bring in grass, booze, or money. You have to go slow, which takes time and effort. The dudes who get caught up are the ones who get over-anxious and move too fast. The first thing you got to do is watch. You know, things like the way a person acts, walks, stands, sits, or dresses could tell you a hell of a lot about them. Things they laugh at or smile at, what makes them sad or angry, like their likes and dislikes. This is all important information if you really want to develop a duck. You've got to start small if you want to get a person to the point where they will do just about anything you say. The last duck I developed was a natural, naive, shy, friendly, a do-gooder, one who could be made to believe anything. You see, prisons don't know how to warn their people. They gotta say, be friendly, be nice, but they don't know how to tell them when they're going overboard. So I'm gonna tell this story like he was my duck. At any rate, I started my duck with nothing more than getting him to give me a pencil and paper in excess of what he was supposed to give. Here's how I developed him. Developing the duck. I watched this cop for a long time. He had all the traits. He was uneasy around his boss, pushed the nice guy bit so strong on us, he overlooked violations of some small unit rules, in other words. He didn't take care of business. He couldn't put across his orders with any kind of firmness, and the cons were giving him a rough row to hoe. When you find a guy like this, you can pretty well figure you got a duck. But you can be too hasty. You gotta be sure. I sent some friends of mine to get him involved in a philosophical discussion to find out where his head was and to push him a little to see how far he'd let things go. They talked about how bad other cops treated them and how they hoped he didn't become like the other cops. He agreed and told them about things he had seen the other bulls do that supported their reason for disliking cops. While the talk was going on, some of the guys broke rules like stepping inside another con's cell, putting marks on the wall, suggesting playing poker, all minor rule violations. The officer said nothing. Each time he started to leave and tell some guy to knock it off, they praised the hell out of him and he'd get back into the conversation. Me? I just watched. The guy was very easily distracted, and we built on the nice guy image. He didn't look like a cop. Sloppy dresser, half-done jobs, and he'd come unglued if anyone said he did a poor job or if someone didn't particularly like him. When this happened, he'd get in a downer conversation telling the cons how no one understood him. They agreed and built his ego. They got on a first-name basis. It's harder to tell a guy no when you're that friendly. When I was absolutely certain that this guy was one of the ones I wanted to develop, I had his unit orderlies do a sloppy job so he wouldn't pass inspection. The sergeant gave him hell. When the sarge left, I went over to the guy and said, "You know what, Pete? You didn't have that coming. The sarge doesn't know you like we do. Out of all the cops in this joint, you're the only one the cons trust. Remember, we told you where to find the convict home brew. He didn't remember you made that bust. I've been talking with the other cons in this wing, and we're going to make you look good from now on." My duck kept raving on how the sergeant had been on his back, that he couldn't just seem to do anything right. So I told him, "I got extra time each day, and I'll fix this place so you'll not only pass inspection, but you'll get a commendation for the cleanest wing in the joint. Ain't gonna let no crummy sergeants talk to you that way." As the days and weeks passed, I worked my tail off for this joker. He began passing his inspections with honors. He had a habit of leaving his lunchbox open or cigarettes lying on the desk, so I began helping myself. I didn't overdo it, and he said nothing. So I asked him for a couple of full writing pads and a few pencils. He was supposed to give only one pencil, usually used, and only a couple of sheets of paper. With a long explanation and unsteady voice, he turned me down, saying no was hard for him. I looked hurt and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking. I thought you knew I liked to relax and write after working at my regular job, then cleaning this unit for you. I only ask you because most of the guys in the swing told me you understand things like that, that you like to see us doing constructive things. Oh, well, it ain't no big thing." I tried to let my expressions say my feelings were hurt, and I was sorry he didn't trust me. And I guess he was like all the other cops. With my head down, I sauntered to my room. Shortly, Pete was at my door. He made sure no one was looking, and then slid a dozen new pencils and 3 new writing tablets under my door. I said, "Pete, you're the greatest. Just like all the guys say, you really try and help convicts stay out of trouble." I worked extra hard the next week, winning Pete's praise from the sergeant who formally cussed him out. Pete was pleased and said, "Thank you, Terry." He used my first name, a sign I was developing improperly. Several months had passed now, and we had become good friends. I sought personal, financial, marital advice, which he gave freely. And since he liked basketball, I liked basketball. He disliked hunting, so I disliked hunting. Now, you gotta be careful with this, too. If you have too much in common, that's not too good. So you let him talk you into believing as he does. For example, he asked me if I believed in God. I seemed hesitant and confused. I let him convince me there was a God. You gotta remember when developing a duck that you're always a student and he's the teacher. You appear to be fascinated by his knowledge. You make him think you need his help, that he's making you a better person, and that you wanna be liked by him. I had this joker bringing me candy, magazines, cigars, and he mailed a couple of birthday cards for me. I always told him he shouldn't do things like that because he could get in trouble, and then I would hint around for something else I needed. Pretty soon he'd bring it. But I made him feel I was looking out for his welfare. Then I figured it was about time I got a little more serious with the guy. One day, a fight broke out in the wing, and my duck tried to stop it. He wound up facing a couple of cons with knives who said they hated cops and were going to kill him. He was scared shitless. I let him stay in that situation for a while and finally rushed in, got between the cop and the cons, and talked them out of hurting him. I never saw a guy so grateful. Right at the time, this duck said he had to do anything, that he would do anything for me. I told him friends needed to stick together, that no one should expect favors for doing what was right. That night, I used Pete's own cigarettes to pay off some of the guys who staged the fight for me. Sometime later, I showed this officer a letter from my sister stating the wife of a guy in our wing had been killed in an accident. The con was a friend of mine, so I asked my duck to tell the guy. He couldn't do it because he gets too emotional, he said. So I wound up telling the inmate myself. When you're grooming a duck, you are limited only by your own imagination. Here are 2 situations that I set up to learn something about the dude. The fight told me fear and friendship could get me what I wanted from the cop, and the second added my sympathy to the list. Everyone in the wing was sad over the loss of the convict's wife, especially the cop. So the next day, I brought my duck a sympathy card signed by most of the cons in the unit and told them they had taken up a collection for the con's kid. I told them I knew it was against the rules and that convicts ain't supposed to have money, but this was different. This would do a lot of good. There ought to be some rules we can break, I said. Most of us convicts have spent a lifetime taking things from people, and the ones we want to give, there's a rule against it. It just doesn't seem right. The cop's concerned over the amount of money with the card and that he might get caught. At about this point, my personality began changing a little. I had to let this guy know that he had already done some dumb shit that could get him into trouble. To do so in a way that showed we were still good friends, but that I meant business. So I reminded him of a few past situations. For the first time, he didn't know how to take me. I immediately got nice again. I said, "Ah, come on. It would do us a lot of good to give for once in our lives. You can't deny a person that kind of inner satisfaction. Any doctor will tell you it's a good therapy. Besides, the penalty for taking a letter out with money in it ain't no greater than the ones you've already taken out. Don't get me wrong, I would never tell, but I have had some trouble keeping some of these other cats in the unit from telling the sergeant that's always on your back." He was beginning to feel the pressure. The confusion on his face was obvious. He wasn't sure where I stood. As I continued talking, I slid the envelope into the inside of his pocket. "There ain't no way you'll get caught. They don't search cops like they do inmates. Gosh, man, you can't let little kids starve just because their old man is in the joint. Those kids done no wrong. There ain't a con in this place who would understand the deep hurt a person goes through when somebody you love gets killed. I thought you were different. You don't have to worry. We took care of those people who might have snitched to the Sarge. No way we're going to let you get in trouble. Besides, I'll never ask you for a favor like this again. It's just those kids." I walked away and left him to think about what I had just said. I had been my old friendly self for a few days, so my duck would become comfortable over taking the letter and the money out. Then I told him some relatives of my friend, the deceased woman's husband, would be sending a package to his house. The package would contain nothing but prayer beads for the grieving inmate. "Don't open the box till you get here," I told him. "We need the address to thank these people, and they were really grateful for the money." He agreed. When the package came, I told the cop I'd show him the contents later, and he said, never mind, he didn't want to know. His voice told me I needed to butter him up a little, because we both knew he was over the barrel. I had him right where I wanted him, but I still had to develop him a little more deeply. I knew he was in debt on the streets, so I got the training officer's clerk, an inmate, to add extra time on the dude's pay records. The cop appreciated the extra money and said nothing. Because I let him know I was responsible for the little favor, he became more friendly, but he was still cautious with me. But this time, I was about the only friend the cop had. Some time back, his real friends began telling the guy he was being too friendly with convicts. I couldn't let that go on, so I started a rumor that the cat was living with an inmate's wife. He came under investigation. Cops like to go with winners, not losers. This guy was a loser, so left him alone. He had to talk to someone, and I was the only person available. I had the guy right where I wanted him, for sure. Took time, but you got to develop a duck carefully if you want it to pay off. Now the guy was ready for the big one. He had to do anything, I said, or I'd toss him to the wolves. Turning the duck into the golden goose. I'd done a lot of time in my life and was tired of prison. I wanted to get out. I'd been thinking about this for a long time now. Getting out had become an obsession with me. My duck and I were about the same size. So I got him off to the side and said, You don't know it yet, but I'm going on parole. And you're going to help me out. My voice was stern and commanding. He looked confused, but he knew I meant business. I want you to bring me a cop's uniform. We had joked about this kind of thing before, and he hoped I was still kidding. With all the hatred I could muster, I said, "Look, you stupid SOB, you ain't got no choice. Every convict in the wing will snitch you off. You took out letters, money, you brought in things we still have stored to use as evidence against you. You've been accepting money from the state under false pretenses. Now you bring in that damn uniform or you're dead, sucker." I stood glaring at him and let what I had said sink in for a moment. Then I handed him a letter from the people who had received the money in the letter he had taken out. It stated they were willing to testify against him. He had no choice. He had to do as I told him. "Listen, you rotten bastard," I continued. "You bring a shirt tomorrow, trousers the next day, and so on until I have the complete uniform. Do you understand?" The duck brought a piece of the uniform each day in his lunchbox. As I received them, I rolled each new item and neatly placed it in the bottom of my footlocker. Then I told this dumb cop to call me off my job whenever this institution search team came into the wing. Make some excuse, like I didn't clean my room, I told him. I knew if I were on hand when my room was being searched, I could talk the searchers out of going far into my locker. Some cops do their job and look at everything in the room, but most of them don't like searching and could be easily talked out of looking in places where a lot of work is involved. You know, there's a psychology behind handling a searcher. One of the first things convicts learn when they first come to the joint is how to beat the search team. Like, if you want to hide a major contraband in your room, then you leave a minor contraband item so that it can be discovered. The dude searching will usually abandon the search when he finds that piece you salted, and he leaves feeling like he's done a fine job. You got to be just a little bit smarter than they are to survive in prison. On the other hand, there is the occasional sharp cop who can't be fooled. When this happens, you're in trouble. So the way you handle this guy is you get all the cons in the area to complain about how the guy dumps stuff on the floor, tears your bedding, etc. If the complaints keep coming about the guy, joint big shots take the attitude that where there's smoke, there must be fire, and they give him a job change. Can you beat that? The dude gets punished because he's doing a better job than anyone else. One morning, my duck called and said the search team was going to be in his unit. I rushed and stood nonchalantly by my cell door. A cop was already in my room searching. I was polite, joked with him, pointed to an area in my room he failed to search, even complimented him on his thoroughness. But when he came to my footlocker, I said, "Man, I'm sorry. It's going to take you hours to get through all that junk in that box." By seeding this thought, he gets tired just looking at the job. They usually just give the box a once-over lightly and quit. I pointed to a master list of things in the footlocker that was taped to the underside of the lid. I said that because the box was so full, the list might make the job more bearable, that it was packed military style, and it took me hours to do it. "But you got to do your job," I empathized. "I don't mind repacking, even though it will take me most of the day. Go ahead, Don." The dude was impressed by my politeness and complimentary attitude, and he convinced himself that a con who encouraged a thorough search is probably clean. I did ask him, however, that as he took things out of the footlocker to place them on the bed, if he didn't mind, and that he could glance at the list to see how orderly I kept my things. By this, I knew two things would take place in his mind. His eyes would check the list as I suggested. When he consistently found things in order, he'd feel he was wasting his time. And the old buddy association I was developing would help convince him I was hiding nothing. So I figured after removing a few things, he would continue the search. He would conclude the search. It happened just as I thought. He removed the top row of clothing and about half the next, then said, "Okay, you clear," and he moved on to the next cell. Phew! Breathing a sigh of relief, I decided this searcher came a little closer than I had better put than I had wanted, and I'd better put my escape plan in action soon. Tomorrow morning, I thought, was a good time as any. My deck comes on duty at 7:45 a.m. At 8 a.m., the night shift goes home. And at the same time, there is a major work release for prisoners. The corridor is always crowded at the time. I figured I had 15 minutes to get out of my room, slip into the broom closet, get into the uniform, then melt into the crowd unnoticed. I would go to the exit door next to the control room, where the sergeant is supposed to identify everyone leaving and stand with a group of officers waiting to go home. The procedure for releasing officers from the security area at the joint is done like this. The sergeant at the control room looks at everyone wanting to go into the sally port. When he's satisfied he's only releasing staff, he pushes a button, which opens first of the two electronically controlled doors. Everyone enters and the first door closes. Before the second door is opened, an officer looks at everyone to assure the sergeant made no mistakes. Once the second door is open, they cross the patio to the administration building where another sally port exists, and the procedure is repeated. When everybody passes through the administration building, there's a final sally port where a tower man and a sergeant make sure the proper people enter and leave. In each of those sally ports, the employees who opened the doors were night shift people, and I had suspected because they were tired and sleepy. They release people not on the basis of positive identification, but because they wore a uniform. Well, at any rate, tomorrow I would find out how correct my suspicions were. The night passed slowly. I had a difficult time sleeping, so I spent most of the night going over and over every detail of the escape plan. Finally, it was 7:45 a.m. I heard the locked door snap, and I knew it was my duck letting me out. I grabbed the uniform and rushed to the broom closet. The uniform fit like a glove. It's funny how clothes can make you feel clean. Almost like I wish I were on the side of the law and not a criminal. Then I thought of my stupid duck and decided I was better off as a hood. During morning work release, the day shift officers stand in the center of the corridor as inmates pass up and down the long hallway on their way to job assignments. Staff members going home walk along one wall to the control room. They're usually looking into the units being released. Their faces are always away from the corridor officers, so it would not be suspicious if I did the same. I started out of the unit. As I passed the officer station, I took my duck's lunchbox for realism. He started to object, and I said, "Don't say it, you dummy, or you're dead." I slipped in the crowd and made my way to the control. The sergeant was peering through the mirror, identifying people. Then suddenly, the bolt snapped and the electric door opened. Everyone stepped into the sally port and the door closed behind me. I kept my head down, slightly, so no one could get a good direct look at my face. The officer looked everyone over from a small, unbreakable window, and he was being careful. I thought it might be over at this point. The officer's phone rang, so people were turning in and drawing keys. And in his momentary distraction, he opened the second door. When I was crossing the patio to the administration building, an officer coming on duty stopped me and asked me for a match. I felt panic surge in my veins. If the group got through the first door without me, I would be alone, and an unfamiliar officer was certain to be challenged. I searched my pocket quickly and said, "Sorry, guess I'm out of matches too." I hurried and caught up with the group just as the first door opened. The desk officer was flirting with a little blonde secretary and just let everyone pass because they were all uniformed personnel. The last sally port was about 75 feet in front of us and the hardest one to get through. An officer in the tower by the entrance building's main gate, as it was called, would identify the people leaving. If he recognized everyone, he would open the first gate. Once we were inside the sally port, the main gate sergeant checks everyone a final time before the gate to freedom can be opened. As the group approached the final sally port, my heart was in my throat. I began to think for the first time there was a possibility of my making it, even though I knew this would be the hardest hurdle. Everyone had now reached the gate. I kept my head low without being obvious about it. The tower man was scanning faces. Then he shouted, "You there, look up." I didn't know if he was talking to me, but I assumed he was. I shadowed my face with my hand, like I was trying to keep the sun from blinding me, and looked up, slightly waving my hand at him to indicate I recognized him. A long moment passed, then the door slid open. While waiting for the final check, I noticed a large group of officers standing in the main gate sergeant's station, ready to be admitted after the night crew were identified and released. I heard someone say in our group that they were new officers going on an orientation tour. The gate sergeant's eyes were scanning the group. I was trying to be inconspicuous by looking slightly away from him. It seemed an eternity of silence as being lived through those few minutes. Then, my world fell apart when he shouted, "You, the officer with his back to me, come over here." I approached the window he was looking through, and this time I looked him right in the eye. I felt disappointed and angry over being so close and getting caught, and had to decide to suddenly hit the fence, even though I knew the tower man would shoot at me. I was mad enough to take the chance. The sergeant said, "What are you doing there? You're supposed to be with these new officers out there." Thinking quickly, I replied with an apologetic voice. I'm sorry, Sarge, but I thought the training officer said to meet him in the training building." "Who the hell let you in anyway?" The sergeant sort of growled in a tone, indicating he was irritated with me. He opened the gate, and as I entered the gatehouse, he stood in front of me and demanded, "Now you stay with those guys, understand?" Yes, I will, sir. But do I have time to run to my car before the training officer gets here? I forgot my ID card." The sergeant looked disgusted. "There's one in every group." "All right, make it fast. The lieutenant doesn't like to be kept waiting." I hurried to the far end of the main parking lot. Behind the last row of cars was a fence separated by a cornfield. I dropped to my knees behind a car and crawled on my stomach and slid under the barbed wire fence to the safety of the tall corn stalks. Keeping low, I made my way to the main highway. I saw a car parked on the highway shoulder. No one was in it, so I assumed the driver had run out of gas. I decided to stand in front of the car and hitchhike. My thinking was, being in uniform and in front of a parked car, drivers would think it was mine and I had experienced car trouble. It worked. I'd been standing about 2 minutes when this car pulled over. The driver motioned me to hurry when I noticed he was wearing the same kind of uniform as I was. My heart dropped. The worst I recognized him was one of the wing officers in the joint I had just left. I was caught. "Get in," he said sharply. I almost could confess, "Okay, you caught me. I'll go peacefully." The lump in my throat wouldn't let me. "Where to?" he asked with a half smile. "The first town you come to so I can get some gas," I managed to answer. The town was about 20 miles away. As we drove, I gathered my wits. He said he'd help me get the gas and run me back to the car. He asked if I was a new employee at the joint, and I was glad to confess that I was. Then I said, "You don't need to return me the car. I'll call my wife and she'll pick me up." "Okay," he said. "It's no bother, you know. Sure remind me of someone I've met before."
"Really?"
"Well, no, I'm sure we've never met," I said. He dropped me at the service station, wished me well, and drove away. I was free. About 3 days later, I was miles away from that prison. I was hungry and tired, so I decided to rob a store near the outskirts of a nearby city. During the robbery, I killed 3 people, but managed to keep from getting caught for over a year. Never mind how I got the gun. I was eventually apprehended, convicted, and returned. I hated that stupid cop I ducked. And while I was on the streets, my obsession to get a message to authority so that Cat would be fired was the thing which led me to the apprehension and my new conviction. Eventually, I had to testify at his trial. Of course, I couldn't tell them much except that I had developed the duck and then the details of the cop's violations. "Anyone else you folks would like to know?" I asked my interviewers. "Only one thing. Now that you're back in prison, were you trying to acquire or have you acquired another duck?" I leaned back in my chair, fixed my eyes on the petitioner as I thought about the question. Took a stick of chewing gum from my shirt pocket, unwrapped it, and slowly slid it into my mouth. I stood to leave the room, paused at the door, and smiled and said, They don't sell gum in these joints, do they? Later, man. That's the story of the duck. Every correctional officer is taught this story. Every convict knows this story. But you know what? Every quarter in every prison in every jail in the United States, every quarter, one person is fired for getting ducked. Whether it is they fell in love with a convict and so started bringing them things, or the convict got them over a barrel because the officer started doing small little illegal things that turned into bigger things and bigger things and bigger things until there was no way out. It goes on and on and on. And you do get ducked. Everybody will get ducked. The problem is, or maybe not the problem, but the first thing you have to realize when you are getting ducked is to go report yourself immediately to your superior. Because if you do, you're going to be safe. But most people, in fact, I would say the vast majority, are so afraid of getting in trouble that they would rather become a permanent duck and get into so much trouble. And every prison, every jail in this country, people get fired all the time for getting ducked. So that's my story for today. I hope you enjoyed it. See you later. Bye.